Welcome to the TetraCast. We are recording this on March 16, 2024, episode 338. I am your host, Josh Torres, your substitute host that you all love, of course. Brian Vitale, or Vitale, isn't here at the moment, so I'll be taking over for this one. Joining me is the usual crew. We have Adam Vitale.
Hello.
We have James Galizio.
Hey, folks.
And we have Chow Min Wu.
How's it going?
So we are at an interesting junction in the month where really big games are about, like new games are about to release next week that, you know, might be working on. And this week, not too much happened. So if the main games we're going to be talking about this week are tests. Everyone loves a good pre-launch test. And, you know, it's in varying capacities. I've been working, I got accepted to the Gundam Breaker 4 closed network test that I'll talk about. And then Chow, we were talking about this last week in news when Nexon opened up. There's a new Vindictus game project. This is like, you know, this is a single player, but primarily a single player action RPG that takes place in the same universe as the 2010 MMO. And they started up the pre-alpha test on Steam this week, and you got to try it out. Tell us what's going on.
Yeah, I only got to try it as a meme, but you know what? I actually kind of enjoy what I did, okay? So this pre-alpha is very early because it's very short. You could probably beat it in like 30 minutes if you're so good at it, or probably an hour if you're bad at it. It's basically a Souls-like, I would say.
It's more like a battle test, right? Like, it's like what you're doing is like, it's basically a very basic environment with some enemies in your way, and like you're just kind of checking out like...
Yeah, basically. Yeah.
Okay.
There is no, there's no treasure chest. Like, you will see treasure chests in, like, this game, but it'll be, like, it'll say work in progress, so you can't even open the treasure chest. So I don't even know how the gearing or the idling works in this game. There'll be some path that will say, there'll be, like, a wall blocking it, and it'll say work in progress, right? So you can't really explore much to it, right?
Mm-hmm. There's these rest points that are quote sort of like bonfires, but a lot of the features haven't been implemented yet. It seems to be like only a rest and that's it, right?
Yeah, it's basically a rest, and there's one of them that lets you teleport to like the previous area, so it'll be something like that. But this game also has like a map, and you could like quick travel to like the bonfires, I would say.
Okay.
So, but yeah, it's a Souls game. You basically like play two different characters in this. So there is Fiona. She'll play like the traditional like Souls character. She has the rolls, the shielding and all that stuff, right?
Yeah.
And the other character you can play is this dual wielder. And he doesn't have a role like the traditional like Souls character. He has like the sidestep, you know?
Bloodborne dash almost, you'd say?
I would say, I guess. Okay. It's like a very fast dash, but no rolling with that guy, right?
Okay.
And one of the things is that this game does not have a stamina bar. Mm. You know, like in most Souls games, you know, there's a green bar and that's your stamina, right? And you kind of like want to make sure your rotation is within that green bar, because if you run out, you can't roll and then you're probably going to die, right?
Yeah.
So this game does not have a stamina bar, so you can roll as much as you like. But the thing is, it's not as powerful as you think it is, because there's like a slight delay, like starting like the second roll or something like that. You could see that it's not fast enough. So if you abuse it, you're gonna get hit, right?
So you would just say, but like there's iframes on the first like dash or roll, but then like it seems to be like either none or reduced. That like if you do it consecutively,
I just see like it's not as quick. You know, okay. it's just not good enough, right?
Right. How does the battle system work? Is it like a basic like light and heavy attack?
Yeah, basic light and heavy attack. But I feel like your light attack does like no damage, so you have to make sure you land the hard attack, right, at the end of your combo string, right?
Okay.
So it's like Fiona would be like her does like a few slashes, and then you end, and she ends it like with this big kick that will stun them. And let's see, I didn't really test out the other guy too much, this combo, but the Fiona combo is just like, it's just a kick combo, right? And there's like special moves when you hold like your left bumper button, and there's like four different special moves with each character. So Fiona has like a shield bash, and there's like this like a shield charge. She'll just like keep running until she hits a wall or something, or you just tell her to stop. And yeah, like every character has like four different moves. Like this is a very short demo. I can't really like give you like how the actual game works. And you could even try like different outfits for your character. You know, it's a Korean game when there's like nothing but skimpy outfits for your character, right?
Okay, I've only seen outfits for Fiona. Does Lan have any other outfits? Because it seems like the focus on people showcasing the game is the four or five different outfits that Fiona has.
Lan does have outfits, but he only has like two compared to Fiona has like five.
Okay, all right. And it's very, you know, it's what you think it is.
Yeah, it is.
Okay, got it.
That's basically it. Like, this is a very short demo. It's like half an hour. It's like you're just there to try out the battle system, and the game actually runs nice to me. I mean, I think it's also like a graphics test. I mean, like I run on max setting, ultra. I didn't see a single frame dip in this game on my PC, which is kind of rare. But you know,
if you were to like give feedback on what, like, obviously they're gonna fill that out with feature, but in terms of like gameplay feel and what things they could like, what do you think could be improved? What would you tell the developers? How it could be improved?
I think the skill cooldown. I think one of the confusing thing is how the shield thing is. Like, okay, in Souls games, when you hold the shield, you basically your character just holds the shield, right?
Mm-hmm.
Like for Fiona, she holds the shield. Like I don't know if it's like a guarding thing. She could bend down and just kind of guard and just kind of like, you know, like those. I don't know, if you watch, like, ancient war movies where people, like, try to guard against, like, archer attacks, they just, like, kind of duck down and just hold their shield in a certain direction, you know what I'm saying?
Okay, yeah.
Like, yeah, I don't really like the guarding system in here, and then you also take a lot of damage regarding as well, so it's kind of like a useless feature, in my opinion, so
can you parry at all?
I think you can. I also see, like, enemies, like, when they hit so hard, you know, it's like a red dot goes to, like, their body, and you could just do, like, this visceral attack or something or similar.
Okay, yeah, it's like an execution move almost.
Yeah. So
since there's no stamina gauge, like is there like any sort of like posture, like hidden posture thing where like they'll break your guard or anything like that?
I can't really tell because there's no stat system. I can't tell what's in there, you know.
I know, but like when you're guarding, is there any point that like they'll do an attack and then like you're caught off balance, like oh your shield went up and you need like a second to like rebalance yourself?
I think there might be. Like, I didn't use the shielding too much, just because it just takes so much damage with it, so it's like, yeah, just screw it, just dodge everything instead, right?
Mm-hmm.
So, it's kind of, like, pointless to shield, in my opinion.
Okay. So, yeah, I mean, it's still very, very early in development, so, of course, you're gonna get feedback from people who are trying it out. I think it's still up to, like, for a few more days, I believe.
Yeah, it's a very short offer. Like, I'll check out the main game. I have no interest in playing the MMO, but if this is, like, a single-player experience, I'll probably check out the full release. It seems pretty fun.
I wish I had the time to play this. It seems pretty neat.
Yeah. So, yeah, we'll see, you know, when the full release comes out, if they have any plans for, like, an early access period, who knows. But it seems like, you know, the foundation is solid, obviously could be improved, but, like, what they're showing right now seems to be, you know, it's an interesting work in progress, a first showing. Good on them, you know, for just like holding this kind of open test, and kind of gathering feedback. And I'm very curious to see, like, you know, what if it'll just be like a normal priced game or a free to play thing. Like, they're still even up in the air.
I mean, the next song. I mean, that's like the biggest worry. You worry about this publisher. It's like all the games that they touch is either like run by like very extreme breed or something, right?
I mean, like, yeah, but I think Nexon is also publishing first Berserker Kazan, and from what I understand, that seems to be a normal priced game. I don't know.
It's like, as long as I do that, it's like, I'm very interested. But they do, like, stuff that they do in their gacha and MMO stuff. It's like, ugh, I'll stay away from that.
Yeah. But, do you think they're gonna hold on to this, like, different playable characters model, or do you think they're gonna have, like, sort of a created character thing? Did they say anything about that?
I think it's probably like their own character models that they give you. And I think they will just sell like outfits or something like that for those characters. That's what I assume.
Oh, do you think that's like, okay, it'll be, do you think like the path for this game is like, here's a normal price game, but we'll add in like, you know, an in-game if you want more outfits.
You know? I mean, I wouldn't be surprised. I mean, that's what Dead or Alive did back then, remember?
Yeah.
It'll be like, oh, the base game just costs this much, but then if you buy all the costume, it costs like $2,000 or something, and you're like, no thanks.
Well, it seems to be, you know, a lot of people seem to at least be sort of interested in what they played, for differing reasons. Some for the combat, some for, you know, cosmetics. Okay, thanks for reporting in on that. As for me, I've been playing this Gundam Breaker 4 closed network test that's only available in Japan, but you know, you can sign up with a Japanese PSN or Nintendo Switch Online account when those were up. And this is kind of a... Bandai Namco likes to do this once in a while for Gundam games. This also happened in Gundam Versus, where these tests are only conducted on specific time slots for 2 hours at a time. So, like, the first test was like 7 to 9 p.m. Pacific on Thursday, then 12 to 2 a.m. the following day, and then like 5 to 7 a.m. the following day. And then as of the time of recording, there's like two more time slots that they're going to be testing this later tonight on Saturday. Which I'll, you know, but it's a very Vindictus. It's a very small test, where there's only three stages. The amount of like Gundam parts, Gunpla parts you can collect is fairly limited. It's to really just test out, you know, obviously on their end, network connectivity. And then for the player, it's like, okay, how does this game play? What are we in for? And this game is really interesting in the sense that on the surface, it looks like prior Gundam Breaker games where you just see it in action from, you know, outsider's perspective, you're just kind of looking in at it. But when you're actually starting to play it, it plays pretty differently from every other Gundam Breaker game that's come out before. Because the real focus of this game is this whole new, like, dual wield system where you operate your left arm and right arm separately. So it's like, instead of light and heavy attacks, it's like square is left arm, triangle is right arm, and you weave these two together to kind of make your own combos, and it'll have different strings depending on what weapon is equipped onto them. And in some cases, it'll have like, if you have like unconventional arms, that they'll have like their own like unique sort of like string in there as well. So getting used to that was pretty, like, it wasn't that big of a hurdle, but it was like awkward at first. And also the game is like, if you're put on a spectrum between like Devil May Cry and like Musou with the opposite ends of the spectrum, this game sort of leads more into like Devil May Cry more so than a Musou game, in the sense that like the way that like you're engaging with enemies is more, there's still multiple enemies on the field, but the way you're engaging with them is less AoE and more like one-on-one combo juggling. Because like when you, there's definitely like air launchers, and like when they're in the air, you're continuing a combo in there. You can like knock them and then chase them or knock them down from the air. And it feels more DMC in that aspect than like, say, the very basic Musou philosophy that the original or the previous Gundam Breaker games had. And of course, like when you're launching them as well, you can actually like fast fall. There's like a dedicated fast fall button to go do that, and then you can continue juggling them with like range weaponry, for example. And you know, there's all in service of like breaking off their parts. And when you break off parts from an enemy, eventually, if like you take off like every part, you can like kind of instant kill them pretty much.
Could you tell me, like, in the Gundam Breaker games, you basically go around collecting Gundam parts and build your own custom Gundam. Is that how it goes?
Same thing here, where parts will drop off enemies. I'm sure in the full release, like, previous Gundam Breaker games, you can go to, like, a shop in the lobby to kind of purchase Gunpla kits. If you're, like, and you can, like, spend, like, in-game currency to get, like, a Gunpla kit and, like, get the parts of, like, a specific, you know, unit you want. But it is very much, it's up to you how you want to play it. Do you want to like recreate your favorite Gundam, go get all like the new Gundam parts and make your own new Gundam with its own custom paint job or whatever, or you could like kit bash and like take different parts from like all these different mobile suits. You can have like a gym head, a Zaku chest, a right arm of Sharzaku, left arm of the new Gundam, the Goof's legs. And that's kind of the interesting thing here, where because of this dual wield direction in the game, left and right arms are separate now. They're not like, they don't come in batches, where in previous games, when you got arms, you got two arms of the same you know, kit that you got. While this one, there's left and right arms are separate parts, so you can really hit bash in a more open fashion.
Sounds like they added a lot of customizability with just having two different arms instead of
yeah, one. Yeah. And also, they just went really like overboard in like the ways that like the previous games already let you have like an almost an unprecedented battle of like freedom, to, like how you wanted to like paint your units, how you wanted to scale different parts to make them bigger or smaller. This one kind of just kind of does it even more. You can have like even different color panel lines. You can have like different like unconventional ways to paint like your gunpla in this game compared to previous entries, where it's like, oh, that's really fucking cool that like that they're going in that direction. And also I really like the lobby system in this game. Let's say like Gundam Breaker 3. The Gundam Breaker 3 lobby was very, I'd say it was awkward, because you had like this faceless pilot like the running around the lobby, accessing like booths to like do the assemble, pick stages, and so forth to connect online. In this one, it's almost like a Phantasy Star Online or Monster Hunter World-esque lobby, where when you're running around, it's not like a pilot, it's actually your own gunpla. So it's just like your robot that you're working on is running around the lobby. You don't need to go to a separate booth to access like the assemble screen. You can do it anywhere. It's only like when you want to access a mission, you go to like up to the counter and choose what mission you want. And the nice thing is like you can have like I think up to 24 people at once in a lobby. You can but for missions you can only deploy up to 3 players at a time. But like if you want to just like, hey, all your friends are like hanging out, they're all playing the game, just have them all in this lobby, and you can see what they're all working on, because you do spend a good amount of time in the menu just like kind of thinking of like what you want to build and design or optimize on your suit. You can kind of see that like, hey, check this out. You can just like see it immediately, like, this is what I've been working on. You have like all your friends like look at it. It's like, dude, that's, you know, I really like the ways they improved that's the social aspect in that respect. In terms of gameplay system, it's weird, because in previous games there was these things called option skills, where essentially there were certain parts that you equipped onto you, and these parts would give you access to a skill. Like for example, like if you equip these missile launchers on your shoulders, as like they're like little small builder parts that you equip onto you, and that would give you the option to equip them as option skills, because like these missile launchers obviously can fire missiles. You can like equip that capability on your unit. And in say in Breaker 3, you can pretty much fire these based on like almost like an ammo counter. It's like it's more like a meter that like depletes, but like, and then after you've fully depleted that, it'll recharge, and then you can use it again. And then like for another option part might be like this big like sword, like anti-ship sword, that you equipped, and then you can like in Breaker 3, you can kind of just spam that, because hey, it's on you. You can use it whatever. It has its own combo strings, and so forth. And you can kind of use these option parts in tandem. One has a cooldown, obviously. The other, you can just like kind of freely swing, and so forth. In Gundam Breaker 4, these option skills, you can have up to four, like up to 8 on you actually, at any given time. But they all share a universal global cooldown. So like these missiles now that like you fired off, it'll take maybe I think 20 seconds to like fill up the cooldown to use an option skill again. So that time I can't use any other option skill. Like if I had like a anti-ship sword, I can't use that until that cooldown is done, And then I'll use the anti-ship sword. It'll do like its own combo. And then that'll deplete the cooldown bar. It'll take 10 seconds again. But you can't, but they all share a universal cooldown in those option skills. Unlike in previous entries where they only had, you know, they had their own separate individual cooldown meters. So that's a change I'm kind of mixed on, because I'm wondering if like there'll be abilities on parts that you can upgrade to lessen the cooldown and make it, you know, maybe almost a non-issue, but I don't know at this point. So that's one change that's like, I don't know if I agree with that. Another change that I do like, though, besides that, is there's another set of skills called EX skills. So there's option skills and EX skills. EX skills, you know, depending on the parts and weaponry that you have, you'll gain access to different ones to these, like one EX skills, like, hey, you equip the new Gundam's backpack, and that means you could get you can equip the EX skill to deploy its funnels. In Breaker 3, you can access them by holding R1 and then pressing a face button, and it'll do the ability. And then after the ability, it'll be on cooldown, and you can reduce that with abilities and so forth. It's a very basic system. In this one, though, EX skills are accessed almost like a super meter in a fighting game. It's like almost like KOF style, where, you know how in KOF there's like the super meter can go up to like 5 bars and so forth. So you can stack them and then you can kind of fire off supers consecutively.
You can also charge it in the old ones. You charge it, or if you're low health, you could use it infinite, unless you want to use a level 2 version.
Yeah, but in a very high level, like, you know, but in KOF, that like that's a thing you can do in KOF that, like, you know, some other fighting games only have like maybe 1 bar, while in KOF it's like, you know, you can stack bars and then kind of fire them off. It works kind of the same way in Breaker 4, where you can stack up to 9 bars and you can, you know, you fill it as you fight. And then each of your EX skills has a number by it, and it'll show how many super bars it'll consume. So, like, deploying those new Gundam fin funnels will consume 1, and then, like, another ability, let's say, like, these 2 shield bits I have on me, will consume 2. So, you know, and so if I have, like, 3 bars, I can fire both of those off pretty much simultaneously towards enemies. It's not an independent, it's not working off like an independent cooldown, but it's like it's all shared via a super meter.
That's skills that take more than 2, like maybe like, I don't know, 5 EX bars or whatever?
The highest one I've read into in the closed network test is one that consumes 3, and that's the F91's Meep. For my build, builds up EX pretty fast, so like it's not like a big issue. Like I can fill up to like 4 or 5 pretty quickly in the game. So it obviously there'll be skills and abilities in the final game that I'm sure can accelerate that even more. So I think the EX skills where they at, like, are in a pretty interesting state, I would say. The option global cooldown, though, is I don't know. I don't know how I feel about that yet. I think it's hard to conceptualize like how it's gonna go until I see like what the full game is like, if there are like abilities to sort of mitigate the cooldown of that. But other than that, you know, it runs at a smooth 60 FPS on PS5, no dips. That you can actually turn off motion blur. It looks very nice and very clear, which is it's a sort of a weird thing to say, but when you played a lot of like Gundam Breaker 2, Gundam Breaker 3, and even New Gundam Breaker, like the image quality of those are pretty muddy at best, especially because there's a lot of motion blur in those older titles.
So I'm just gonna use something. It's like New Gundam Breaker. That's a game that you really dislike. But was that game had any like performance issues, or was just the gameplay just was terrible?
I would say, I mean, that didn't run at 60 FPS. That was like 30 FPS. And a lot of it is like the core structure of it is very, it went way, way too way too off the course, right? Where Gundam Breaker 2 and Gundam Breaker 3 were like, you proceed through stages, they're pretty linear, you go through enemies and you go to the next area, you actually like barely walk into like the next zone. New Gundam Breaker kind of disposes of that linear stage format and makes it more to like a competitive 3 versus 3 arena format where you're kind of, it's almost like a PvP. I know there's actually PvP in the game, but like even in the main single player game, you're still simulating like PvP matches off against teams of 3. And then you had this whole objective thing of like competing with this team of 3. And at certain points, like you can actually swap your parts in the middle of combat, which sounds cool on paper, but in practice, it feels kind of bad because you really want to play with like this cool creation that you made. But hey, you slice off the enemy's arm and they, you're storing it because just in case you take damage and they slice off a part, you can swap it to like an enemy part that you picked up. So your gunpla looks awful. And plus, like you only get the base stats of the enemy that like you equipped it on. So the stats of the swappable part that you use to replace are way worse because it's unupgraded and it just doesn't fit with like what your build is. So they were trying something different, but it just fundamentally at its core just wasn't, in practice, it wasn't all that great and pretty bad.
Damn, that sounds like a terrible idea.
I think in Gundam Breaker 4, I'm kind of giving them the benefit of the doubt on this because it's a closed network test. It's very limited. So it's up to only these 3 stages. But right now, like the level design or the stage design rather is, I have to imagine it's going to be better in the full game. But right now, all 3 stages are basically the same where like you're in this, you spawn in, you're in this arena, and then you're fighting off waves of enemies. And then you're not even traveling to like a new zone. You just get teleported into the next zone, fight off these waves, and then you go to the next zone, get teleported to the next zone. That's either a boss or like a final set of waves with like maybe a boss-esque enemy or mob. And that's it. And I can't imagine this is how it's going to be for every stage in the full game. I have to imagine there'll be some variety. It was one of those things that's like, oh man, there's like a bad first impression of like how on the stages that you're deciding to showcase for this closed network test. So hopefully the full game will have, you know, way more mission variety in its stages. And yeah, I mean, those are just like very, very initial surface level thoughts on it so far. Where I think it's really cool that like it's not like a clone of like Gundam Breaker 2 or Gundam Breaker 3. It's like it's different in an interesting way, which I vastly prefer over like just like cloning established formula. It's like trying something new. And I can see like the potential of like really, really, really cool things. Once you start like opening up like more of the parts, more gunpla, and more systems, and how you decide to like enhance abilities and skills, and all sorts of stuff. And, like I know I'm gonna spend like a fucking shitload of time when this game comes out, whenever, sometime this year. But like right now, like in this limited capacity, like I'm just like, okay, there's like definitely some questionable things right now that I'm like, I wonder how it'll shake out in the. So that's kind of my thoughts in a nutshell right now on this Gundam Breaker 4 closed network test. Other than those two pre-release games that we got to try out, Chao, you and me have also checked out the new Lucilius boss fight in Grand Blue Fantasy Relink. This is a really funny one because for people who like were already at the end of the game, ready to unlock it, they downloaded this patch, and when they loaded their save file, they were immediately greeted by a new cutscene where the crew is just talking with a very popular character, Sandalphon.
Most popular, you mean?
Okay, yes. Most popular. Sorry. So, and he basically introduces, like, you know, let's remember our showdown with Lucilius. So, pretty What did you think of this new boss? Because you're the one who's very familiar with it because of like the base browser game, so you know how
it's very over the top, and I fucking love it. I know F is a, was a, how do I say it? He's technically sealed up. You don't know, like, he's basically sealed up like in a pocket dimension. So that's why it's like, oh, it's a retelling of how the fight should go down, right? Because he's not actually there, right?
Uh-huh.
Because they beat him in the mobile game. He's sealed up for now, right? But they're giving hints that he's coming back. But yeah, this fight's great. It has all the 12 labor mechanics. Obviously, they're much more simpler. They're not as complicated as they are in the mobile game. And some attacks don't even have the same property, like his Gopher Wood arc, which is people known as the racist attack from Lucilius. The reason it's called the racist attack in the mobile game is because it's, if you bring your party in a mobile game with different, like, race of people, like, let's say you have a Harvin, a Primal, or something different, if you bring all the same, if your party's all drafts or all Aeruns or whatever, every duplicate will die, basically. That's why it's called a racist attack.
Mm. So it's basically trying to encourage, hey, make sure like all members of your party are different races, because if they're all the same race, they're all going to get wiped out because of the property of
this attack. And to make it worse, he has, what is it, in the original mobile game, if people die 6 times, that's a wipe. It will kill your entire part, like everybody in this raid is dead.
Mm.
That's basically it. But in this version, is that if there are 6 deaths, he'll trigger Paradise Lost. And that move is very hard to dodge in this version, right?
Okay, so yeah. I haven't done this boss yet. I don't know anything about him. Like, I know he has like a 12 labors mechanic, which I don't know what that means. But like, if I were to try to fight him right now with an endgame party of AI that's like fully leveled and whatnot, like, how hard is it? Like, do I it's need to possible. Find like
people find the AI is better than playing with people because he shoots so much projectiles to the point that
AI is pretty good at dodging.
AIs are better.
Well, yeah, AI seems reliable, more reliable than like a party with full like real people.
I guess I was just, you know, I keep hearing like he's like a super boss, he's really hard, and like if I like I haven't tried this yet, I probably will try it, but I'm in the middle of other assignments. But like if I were to try this boss, am I going to be like really frustrated because it's like a really 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 hard boss? I need to find like the perfect team of other friends and players who actually know how to play him, or
him? He's clearable by yourself. People already made strats on how to kill him with one controllable character and a party of like very powerful AIs.
Yeah, I think it'll be good. Yeah, it's a tough fight because a lot of it is like learning the properties of each phase of the fight. Like there's like different phases of it. If there's one thing I don't like about the fight, it's very cutscene heavy. So,
oh yeah, you'll have to see this cutscene every time if you beat him or do it properly.
Yeah, like
it'll be like this fight in FF14. I think Shiva, for example, and Savage. Every time you'll see this stupid cutscene for like 1 minute once you get like the health down to 50%. James can relate.
There's like definitely each almost every single phase of like the fight has like a different cutscene associated with it to like kind of signify, hey, this is the next phase of the fight.
But those cutscenes are very cool, though. It's so over the top.
They're cool, but after you see them for, like, the 50th time, it's like, okay, great. I just wish there was, like, a skip button. It's like, okay, can we just, like, get out of there? I don't need to see, you know, what Sandalphon is doing, you know, to counteract whatever Lucilius is doing. Because, you know, as they discussed earlier, like, Sandalphon does help you out in the fight at various points, but it's just... And you know, as rewards for this fight, there's 3 new sigils that they added to the game that are like all very, very good. They power crept the damage cap meta of the game with the sigils.
You're forced to grind a new set of sigils. These, was it Alpha, Gamma, and Beta? Was it?
I mean, I think only like one of those is actually really good. But
I think when they're fully maxed out, they're very strong. Like you get like what was it 50,000 damage cut from using your SBAs if you're fully capped out. Was it Gamma?
Yeah. Like, I mean, they definitely have uses, for sure.
You're definitely going to be replacing your old one, but you had to, like, fully upgrade it before they're considered viable to replace it.
But that's the weird thing, right? Like, if you can already clear Lucilius pretty consistently without them, there's like really no point still, because like, what are you actually, what content are you actually going to use those sigils for?
I don't know. That'd realistically. Be great.
So it's like you're not. It's kind of weird. Like, how? What's the motivation for
that kind of going for them? That kind of reminds me, like, when Fatalis dropped in Monster Hunter World Iceborne. Like, his armor set and weapons are like the best in the game. Like, and it's not even close. And it's like, okay, so what do you? What do you use them on?
Yeah, there's, exactly. There's a handful of it's these just, things where you fight the strongest boss to get the best weapon or whatever, the best armor. It's like, well, you already beat the strongest boss to get that.
It's to give you a power fantasy, I guess.
You know what I associate with this thing, this trope or whatever, getting the strongest weapon from the strongest like trial, hardest trial. I think of Dark Cloud.
Oh.
In Dark Cloud, you have to go up, like in the post game, there's like a 100 floor dungeon that's like really hard, you know, basically a lot of resource management, making sure you're strong enough and whatnot. And by the end of it, there's a tough boss. And at the end of that, once you finally get to the end, you get the Chronicle 2 sword, which is the best sword in the game. But then that was the last thing to do. There's nothing else to do. You just get the sword and you're just like, okay, that's it.
Yeah, like,
there's nothing to use the sword on.
The only thing that, like, when it comes to, like, this sort of thing in games, like, it makes sense if, like, you include this thing before you finish the story of the game. So, like, hey, you're rewarding me with, like, this really fucking crazy piece of equipment, and I can just, like, kind of breeze through, like, the last part of the game and, like, completely overpower, like, the last portion of the game.
The ProZD video where he's, like, meeting the final boss after doing all the side quests.
Exactly.
That's kind of what I like about some older RPGs, where it's like, oh, you did end game activities that are maybe harder in the final boss. Let's make the final boss harder. It's like, it's wild that a bunch of PlayStation 1 RPGs did that, but we don't really see that happen nowadays. It feels like it makes sense to do that, but we just don't see it happen.
Yeah. But with Granblue, at least, they can always add more. Like, here's an even harder boss, and hopefully you need the sigils from the Lucilius fight that will help out, or whatever.
Yeah, I mean, they still have more content updates to do. They still have the two new playable characters and then the set
send the fun in May.
May, yeah. So,
and then after that, it's completely blank. And you're
Even then, like, those two, there might be, like, new quests associated.
Yeah,
like,
they said there are going to be new quests. Yeah. They didn't, like, highlight a boss or anything, but
yeah,
didn't they imply that if Relink did well enough, they might make an expansion? I'm pretty sure it's getting an expansion now. Then, if that's the case,
yeah, I don't know if they've said or alluded to anything like that pre-release, but you know, hopefully, you know, they have future plans, whether it's like a sequel or just more, you know, maybe like a brand new like actual expansion, not just DLC, like an actual hey, you know, back in the old days when RPGs got expansions. you know
what I want? I want them to kind of recreate the whole Lucilius storyline in the Granblue Relink kind of setting, right?
Because you want the what makes the sky blue but Relink style?
Yeah, I would take that any day. Because the main story in Relink's really weak, right? It's literally like you're chasing you know, different towns to find Lyria, and then the main villain has like hardly any motivation. She's like comical at best, right? It'll be like, oh, I just want to destroy this world so I could go back home. And you're like,
yeah, that really okay. As someone who doesn't have context for Granblue, like, I almost felt like I was missing something for like the story.
No, even people that play the mobile game were like, was that it?
Yeah, this isn't really a spoiler if you haven't played it, but it's quite literally she's just like, I want to go home to the back where the Astrals live, but this requires me to kind of kidnap Lyria and, you know, put other people in danger so you stop her. And that's kind of it? So, okay.
and the thing is, like, I think they're going to, like, expand on her because, like, you really kind of didn't see her, like, exit the story in the way that you think you do. Like, she kind of just gets knocked off and then you're like, oh, and then you never see her again.
Yeah, she literally just gets, like, knocked off a platform and falls. Yeah. And you're like, oh, that's the end. Never see her again.
And she's an Astral. Astrals are super OP, right? It's like, you're telling me that's going to kill her. I doubt it.
So I'm sure there's going to be more storylines and that they might introduce whatever. So we'll see. But, you know, but in terms of, like, you know, the first piece of content, even though it's just, like, just one boss fight, there's a pretty cool end game boss fight that's, like, It does take like some learning time if you're just going into it without reading a guide or anything. You're actually learning the video game.
Well, I'm gonna read Chao's guide so I know what I'm doing.
bring Vayne. Vayne can cheese through all the mechanics.
Okay, I haven't powered up a Vayne though.
Yeah, but he can cheese through mechanics. He's get the shield that will let you be immune to all these attacks.
So funny thing, me and three other friends tried to stab an Inversement live, and like one of them was a Vayne main. So short thing, very first fun thing of the fight, like, does Paradise Lost put up that barrier? All right,
nothing's happening. It's not hurting at all.
Having a Vayne, that was the thing like with Vayne pre-release, right? Where like when we all saw Vayne do the barrier ability for the first, like, oh, he's gonna be endgame core. He's gonna make fucking a lot of fights so fucking dumb with his barrier ability. And sure enough, Vayne good. Okay. Well, that's what we've been playing for now.
It's pretty slow week, I would say, unless you're doing backlogs from 2 weeks
ago. We're 40 minutes into the podcast, which I know for some podcasts, that's like a normal length. And we're like, okay, I guess we're in the news section already. But next week, we'll have a lot more to talk about, for sure.
Yeah, for sure.
We have Rise of the Ronin coming out. We got Dragon's Dogma coming out. We got
Princess Peach Showtime coming out.
Legend of Legacy. There's a lot of stuff. Maybe one of these days. Probably not next week, because next week we'll probably be pretty busy. But it'd be nice if we get Colin on or some, or more about like Unicorn Overlord and whatnot, you know. But then
they circle around back then.
Well, yeah. I mean,
we got James here.
Yeah,
I almost finished Unicorn Overlord. I just right as I was about to finish it,
more
assignments.
I talked to, I suggest you should play that on expert mode with item caps on Crucinobia.
Yeah, I think I talked about this last week where I said that the game's difficulty feels a little too easy unless you play on the hardest difficulty. I stand by that 100% now. Like, now that I'm basically at the end, it's one of those things where if you have any experience whatsoever with those types of games, just set it to expert. Don't even hesitate.
I just think like they probably worry about their fan base, so they probably made the game a little bit too easy just to kind of make sure that everyone gets to play their game.
So the funny thing is, like, there was a day one patch that even added like an easier difficulty as well. So
the made all the existing difficulties easier too, going off the patch notes. So it's yeah.
Huh. Also, this week, if you were a backer to the Aiden Chronicle Kickstarter, go to your Yeti account and you should have access to the beta code. It's the Steam code. Even if you backed other platforms, the beta is only on PC. Apparently, it is it doesn't transfer over to the main game or anything like that, but you can get, like, I think they advertise it as like a 6-hour demo or something like that, so it's pretty meaty, so you can play it if you want, but I think I'll hold off.
Yeah,
I would hold off if they said that your dad doesn't transfer over to the full game.
Does it? I have no idea, actually. I don't know if I like it. What's the scope? Is that from the very beginning and then you can transfer over saves? I have no idea. Okay.
That comes out next month, in our next month of RPGs.
At the very least, when you think about it, after Dragon's Dogma 2, in terms of new releases, there's not really like a lot of like new releases between like...
Early April. You have like a 2-week period in early April, maybe 3 weeks to like catch up again.
And then you got Gaiden, Sog Emerald Beyond, Stellar Blade, all within the same week, and it's like... Then like... May seems like it's the dry period, but even then, like, it's filling out. Like, the Thousand Year Door remake/remaster is coming out then, which I don't know if there's anything else yet, but then, like, obviously June is packed and July is getting packed.
And we'll go over the news headlines here where they announced a few release dates for sure, including that one.
Okay, speaking of... before we get to news, I wanted to do a shout-out here. One of our writers, Junior Miyai, actually wrote up about an interesting feature for the... basically chronicling like the life and death and the afterlife of that MMORPG for Shin Megami Tensei called Shin Megami Tensei Imagine. I remember playing this game in the West when I was under Area Games way back when. And he's been kind of getting back into it because of of a new private server that went up in November 2023, called New Moon, and basically describing what Shin Megami Tensei Imagine is, giving a chronology over its official lifespan in Japan and in the West, and then how fans of that MMO have preserved it, almost in a similar arrangement to City of Heroes a few weeks ago, where the fans of the people who are running the private server have gotten in contact with Atlas, and Atlas has pretty much given them their blessing in being able to run it, obviously with some conditions attached to it, but they're not going rogue or anything.
This isn't like, it's, how do I put it? It's maybe slightly rebellious, but it's not like they're getting permission to have a private server in a way. But a big component of this piece that Junior put up was also just talking about like preservation of MMO type games, especially in like the early aughts, mid aughts, where like most video games, like single player video games, if you can find a copy in a console, you can play it still from, 10, 20, 30 years ago even. But like there's some of those games from the early period of MMOs that once the servers are down, they're down, right? Even if you have a copy of the game, you can't play it. So that's why you need private servers. And City of Heroes last year, I believe, basically got a sort of an official, unofficial server, if that makes sense, to play it. There's from, I think that's NCSoft, I believe, is the publisher there. But in this case, just a private server for Shin Megami Tensei Imagine. And kind of he talked to some of the people in the Discord channel that runs that. And basically just, his piece is basically just talking about, that's kind of the idea, is having this game be available to play. If you wanted to play it, it's available. This is what the work had to be done to make it available. So
I always think about like how much I played Ragnarok Online private servers when I was way, way younger because of accelerated rates, because the original rates of like of how much money, how much experience you gain in the official Ragnarok Online servers was like abysmal, very, very sluggish, very grindy. So that's why private servers were fun, because like they accelerate by 4 times or 10 times, so you can kind of get to like the fun like late game stuff way, way faster. And it's interesting because obviously in this agreement with Atlas for SMT Imagine, the people at New Moon like said, okay, we won't receive any monetary benefit or anything outside of that, personal payments, no donations, no fundraisers. And I'm just thinking of the private servers back then for Ragnarok Online, like absolutely was like, you can become a member if like you pay this, fee, it's totally like, outside of like the obviously no blessing for developers. Yeah. It's like very just rogue Ronin, like we're fucking doing this. So it's just really funny. Just like making me think about that, man. That was one hell of a time. Especially when you started getting the custom classes, like people just started making up classes, like a Jedi class in Ragnarok Online. Okay, sure. Give that a read. It's a really fascinating read from Junior. It's called A Broken World Preserved, Shin Megami Tensei Imagine, MMORPG Preservation. Moving on to the news.
Let's start with the second news, Pip, because that's kind of like almost related in a way.
Oh, yeah, sure. This is RuneScape creator announces free-to-play MMORPG Brighter Shores set to release in 2024. So this is from the developer and publisher. This is Fen Research, but that company is from... what's the RuneScape company called?
Andrew... Jagex. The one of the co-creators of RuneScape, one of the original creators, Andrew Gower? I'm not sure how to pronounce his name. And so I actually did play RuneScape a bit, like in the very early days of RuneScape.
Me too.
And I know there's like a, I say new, but it's not really probably new anymore. They like updated RuneScape in terms of how it looks and whatnot. It's like got a completely different style to it now. And then they actually released like classic RuneScape. You can buy that again. That's the one I'm familiar with, like the actual classic RuneScape, not the new classic RuneScape.
Even the old school RuneScape is like the still the newer version. I'm thinking of like the very, very basic 3D geometry model RuneScape, right, that was played on browsers.
But I know I've seen like, I've seen like the new version of RuneScape and it like looks totally different. But anyways, so this game is, if you look at just some of the trailer and the screenshots for it, it looks like classic RuneScape in a way, in that sort of early 2000s MMORPG. Andrew just wanted, he's the creator, one of the creators of RuneScape, and probably just wanted like try something similar to what he did with the original RuneScape. But reading through the press release and seeing the screenshots and trailer for this game, I don't know exactly like if there's a hook here that's different or whatnot than just being another MMO, except that it is definitely in that classic style where you don't have, very complex like 3D animations and movements or anything like that. You just have your little 3D avatar. You're doing different cooking and farming and cleaning and fighting in the game. And it is considered a free-to-play game. So I don't know if like RuneScape, I know RuneScape was also free-to-play. You get like certain access to stuff if you do pay, or whatnot.
The RuneScape model was interesting because, like, if you played free to play, there's like certain gates you couldn't go across because you weren't a member or like didn't pay into it.
So, yeah,
like, it'll just say, "Hey, you can't cross it because you're not a premium account, or whatever."
So I'm reading the press release now, and it does say, opposed to the onslaught of microtransactions in modern MMOs and free to play games, the studio has remained dedicated to providing hours and hours of content for free. And an all-inclusive premium pass will be available for those seeking extra quests, adventures, and stories.
Okay.
So it sounds similar.
Uh-huh. Yeah, that makes sense.
But yeah, I guess if you are a fan of RuneScape, maybe don't play RuneScape anymore, but kind of want something that feels nostalgic in a way for it, keep an eye out for this.
Yeah, for brighter shores, I have to imagine, from Andrew's point of view, like, I wonder if it's, like, if I were to, like, remake the core philosophy of RuneScape again from the ground up, with everything that I've learned over the years making RuneScape, what would it look like?
Yep.
That's how I see this. And I think that's really, really cool. I wish for the best. I think, my younger self fucking loved the shit out of RuneScape. It took up hours and hours of my life because that's basically my first MMO experience.
I mean, it was one of those games, like, before smartphones and things like that, anyone could play RuneScape. It was in a browser, so you didn't have to have, like, a massive PC, early 2000s-wise. Like, anyone could, like, you just go to this website, runescape.com or whatever, create an account, log in and play. So, I was in middle school at the time. That was just something that like anyone could do, and like, hey, you can play it with your friends and it doesn't cost anything, and it was very cool. So I think a lot of people our age probably did at least play a little bit of it, because the barrier of entry was very low, and a lot of people have that nostalgia for it.
It was definitely like, it was a bizarre feeling like playing that while also being like a dot hack fan, like, alongside that. So like, you're kind of like trying to find deeper meaning in, like, for me at least, in RuneScape, because of like what you've seen in dot hack. Like, oh my god, it's like,
okay, I never made the dot hack connection.
I'm sorry,
personally. Yeah.
My brain worms were so probably not a good thing to admit publicly, I guess.
Yeah, I was playing Ragnarok online during those times, I think.
Mm-hmm.
I'm trying to think where Ragnarok was. It was it a little bit after RuneScape, or maybe, I think it had to be,
I think, RuneScape was 2001.
Yeah,
let's see. I played Ragnarok online when maybe back in 2002 to 2003-ish. I think.
I think I went to RO after I was done with RuneScape, because I was like, oh man, this looks fucking cool, and then I got introduced to.
I think it was like a reverse problem for me. It'll be like, hey, you guys should try out RuneScape instead, and you open it, it's like, what the hell is this? Right? So that, I think that was for me.
Yeah. The good old days of mining for hours for materials to go make your new armor. Oh, so good.
I do love it.
Okay, you gotta do it. You gotta level up your mining skill.
I wonder if you're listening.
I misspoke earlier. The new version of old RuneScape is not called Classic RuneScape. It's literally called Old School RuneScape. And yeah, there are 1,000 people playing it right now on Steam. So, yeah.
Yeah, if Granblue dies, I hope there's Granblue Classic or something on
there. Granblue Classic. Old School Granblue.
There's actually, I guess, 3,000 people right now playing new RuneScape, which I know is not really that new anymore, but okay. On Steam, like the Steam version specifically. So that's not massive numbers, but 3,000 people, that's right now, that's not nothing.
I'm sure that's more than people on Aeon right now.
Is that on Steam? Aeon? No. Oh, Aeon MMO, is this it from NCSoft? What is this? Or is this just some fake thing? I don't know.
What about Lost Ark? Because that game has more than 3,000 people online.
I'm sure there is.
Oh, Lost Ark probably has a bunch.
Yeah. That still has like a pretty sizable population.
That has 40,000 people playing it right now.
Yeah. So about as much as people playing Relink.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So the next one we have here is about the Feline Dark Fantasy Action RPG Crystalla. It's coming out in May via Steam Early Access. This is by Astral Clock Tower Studios. And this is, they
basically like ran a Kickstarter. Dark Souls for furries is my interpretation of this.
Souls for furries? What?
Okay. You play as like cat people, okay?
What's this? I want to say if this is like a part of a Steam demo event.
I'm not sure. It did have a Kickstarter campaign, but yeah, it's, I mean, I didn't mean that like disparagingly, but it's literally dark fantasy, stamina-based RPG. It even says in the press release, Souls-like vibe, so they said it, not me.
Go for it.
It's early access for PC, but they're coming to consoles later, but yeah, you play as like cat people. So yeah.
Yeah. So yeah, coming later this year, like the full launch will have PS5, Xbox Series, and Switch. And yeah, you know, going through the release teaser trailer for it that you put up, it's like, you're not wrong. It is a Souls-like that has cat people.
Yep. Yeah. Indeed. Okay. The Kickstarter campaign raised $100,000, so, you know, that's how it began life that way. So
it's interesting how the trailer for Early Access is like, yeah, it works on Steam Deck. It's like, okay.
Cool. Yeah, I'm just kind of looking through this, and seems neat. We have more new content coming for one of our favorite games last year. It's actually out now. Wandering Sword. They had a new free update that called the Southern Chronicles, which adds a new storyline, new difficulty mode, and new game plus to the game. So it's basically filling out like throughout the game when you go through like the Southern region, like the way that the things that it had you do felt relatively sparse compared to the rest of the game. So now they're trying to flesh it out a bit more with more storylines and characters in this new update.
I think this is cool because one of the cool things about Wandering Sword is that a lot of like the character quests in that game, and like those are like long side quest chains that technically aren't part of like the main story, but they're pretty in-depth and they're pretty fleshed out. And if you actually weren't paying close enough attention, you might actually get confused. Wait, is this part of the main story or is this part of a side quest? Which is always a good, you know, thing to have, really, where it feels meaningful. So they're basically just adding, hey, here's a couple more, like, here's another storyline.
Interesting, like, the way you access this, like, they even have, like, we recommend using a save before the quest, like, this main storyline, like, become Martial Disciple. But if you don't have that, we'll give you a save file that's all prepped and ready to, like, do the new content, so you can just get that save file and like load up that save. Like, okay, that's a cool thing that they did for people. It's like, hey, you might not have a save that like, you know, is ready for this because you didn't know.
And New Game Plus is kind of cool because like I have a save file at the end of the game. Like I could take that and kind of start over if I just wanted to sort of experience the game again with new content in the future because they're still adding to it.
Yeah.
I don't have to start from scratch. I haven't really messed with it, so I don't know exactly how it works, but you know, that's always a cool option. And I know they're planning on adding more and more to it, so yeah, it's a cool game.
I'll definitely like be interested in revisiting it after they're done like with their whole content roadmap.
Right, that's That's kind of what I was thinking. Like, I probably won't come back to visit it for just this one update. But, you know, once it's like maybe, you know, a couple of years from now, if they have a lot more added to it, try to check it out. Compare it to my original playthrough last year.
We have new details on the upcoming Visions of Mana that Kite translated. There was a new press release that came to Japanese outlets like maybe a week or so ago, and we're like, maybe it's like, oh, it's going to be an English press release, but it didn't come.
Yeah, this is sort of weird in that, like, usually Square Enix, being a huge company, usually when they announce something for like a Japanese press release or audience, especially for a game that's going to be released simultaneously worldwide, they usually take like a day or maybe two to like, okay, here are the English details. You know, it's usually pretty hand in hand that way, but after about a week, they introduced all the characters, like the main four characters for Visions of Mana and a few other things, but they never introduced them in English. So we're like, okay, well, I guess we'll just translate the Japanese press release this time, like the old days. Kite translated the press release. So the press release, there's a bunch of new screenshots. A lot of them are very character-focused. So we see our main character, Val, which we've been introduced to already, his childhood friend, Hina, who is chosen to be a child of fire, and that Val is the soul guard protecting her for their journey. And then we meet two new characters, which if you were eagle-eyed, you'd see them in like the previous trailers and whatnot, but now we're actually formally introduced to them. We have Karina, who is a winged, like sort of sprite type character, and she's got like the red, long red hair. She apparently lost a wing due to an accident. And she travels around with her friend, her little, it looks like a mini Flammy.
Yeah, that's a good description.
Mini Flammy, Ramco. So Ramco is the, I guess, the mascot of the game. And that's Karina's little mini Flammy is Ramco. So that's one of the characters in the game. And if you saw, she makes very brief appearances in the previous trailers. And then we have Mortria, who is kind of a cat boy prince-like thing. He's got a cape, he's got a rapier, got the cat ears. Sort of looks like the Ni No Kuni kid, only a little older. I mean, I'm not wrong, right?
I never would have like associated with the Ni No Kuni kid.
I mean, he's got like the same kind of hairstyle.
Yeah.
So like the yellow hair so kind of comes down to his chin, with the ears poking out. Anyways. So he, according to the press release, he comes from the moon town Etherana. So he's from a moon, I guess. There's even a screenshot of him with like the moon in the background, I guess. So he's from the moon. I wasn't expecting that. But his introduction in this press release is kind of vague. He says, an incident that happened in his hometown during his childhood inflicted a deep wound on his mind. I don't know. He's kind of a broken character, I guess.
Are we traveling to the moon in this game?
I don't know, maybe. But yeah, those are the four characters we know of so far. So we kind of knew the original, the main character and the main heroine. We have the new two characters here, and basically the rest of these details. We get introduction to spirit vessels, which spirit vessels, they're sort of like the spirits in the previous games, but these allow you to have different gimmicks in the world. And even the press release even says, if you come back to previously explored fields with new spirit vessels, you might get new discoveries. And this also is built into the class system, where you can change your character's abilities. It looks on the surface similar to Trials of Mana, but it seems to be tied into this spirit vessel mechanic. For example, one of the spirit vessels is called the Jin Boomerang. And it is a spirit vessel that holds the wind spirit, Jin, and its effect revolves around whirlwinds. And if you equip it, it shows that Val will become a rune knight, Karina will become a dance princess, and Mortreya will become a wanderer. And we got little renders of the characters in their new outfits. It's always kind of cool to see, like, not only do these characters have their bespoke character designs, but they also have different designs for the different classes that they'll exhibit. I guess Hina might not actually be playable. She doesn't show up in these class screenshots, just the other three characters. I'm trying to remember if I saw her in battle in the trailers or not. Anyway,
I don't think so.
So the other three characters are playable.
Like Trials of Mana, which is not a bad thing. It's actually really good. I actually like Trials of Mana.
Yeah, so it seems like it's taking Trials of Mana's kind of like philosophy and scope and idea, or not maybe not scope, but idea and, you know, expanding the scope. And then like another spirit vessel that they introduce is Lunasphere, which has the spirit Luna, and that gives Val the Aegis class, gives Karina the Moonreader class, and Mortrea the Nightblade class, and you see their outfits for those three classes as well. Get screenshots for that. And then we get a more screenshots of our favorite armadillo dog, Pickle.
Can't wait. I need to hear the release date already. It looks so charming.
But for June?
June would be not bad. Not a bad time frame. As long as it's not like April. May is fine. June is everything after April is fine. Until then. So yeah. So check out all those new details for Visions of Mana. Hopefully we'll hear more about the game soon. We have new trailers, or our new trailer for Rise of the Ronin that details the narrative, the open world, the characters, new behind-the-scenes video.
Sony and Team Ninja and Koei Tecmo kind of working together here. They've released a bunch of videos kind of very regularly for this game. They actually have like two different pre-release like video series. They have their behind the scenes series, and then they have their like vignette series. The behind the scenes does go a little bit more into like interviews with like mini interviews with the creators and whatnot. And they talk about in this game, the main character, you have like a person that they call your Blade Twin that is an important character in the story. They talk about some of the kind of historical figures that make appearances in the game. And then in the story video vignette, they talk about there's like different factions. And by factions, I don't know if they play a part in the really, I don't know how much they play a part in the game itself. But the factions that they label are like the pro-shogunate, anti-shogunate, and the Western forces. So like Commodore Matthew Perry and whatnot. In the game, so we'll see. Next week, we'll talk more about this game.
Yep, we'll have more to say about this game for sure.
You're playing it, right? You can say that, but yeah, you just can't talk about it till next week.
Yeah, I mean, there were previews that came out, and I was like,
yeah,
I could broadly say what I was talking about when I played at the very beginning of the game, but it's like, yeah, I'll just save my full thoughts for the full game,
right?
Because I'm very far in right now. I'm like, I'm definitely going to say something I'm not supposed to.
the preview restrictions are pretty limited. So
yeah, here's one. The character creator is in depth and cool. There you go. Huge. What do you mean? That's how it was for Neo 2 as well.
Are people going to make? Oh, never mind. Right.
I'm sure people will make bizarre stuff, but people are also fiddling with the character creator for Dragon's Dogma 2.
Yeah.
As well. We've seen some really good things coming out of that creator, like the FF7 Rebirth Moogle.
Yeah.
You know?
Monster Factory. Okay.
I still haven't downloaded and booted up that character creator. I don't know what I'm going to make yet. I don't know anything what I'm going to do yet. released there's a new trailer, a pre-launch trailer for Euden Chronicle 100 Heroes, which is, you know, still on track to releasing on April 23rd worldwide. As we mentioned earlier, people who backed it already have access to the beta to play for 6 hours. This is just a general overview of the game, more new footage.
There's been a couple of lengthy trailers for this game. Like a couple months ago, there was like a 6-7 minute trailer, and here's like a 4 minute trailer, kind of just going over the entire, kind of a little bit of everything. Shows some of the combat, shows some of the, a lot of the characters, there's a lot of mini games, which that's very true to Suikoden. When you make your base, you get more and more little cooking and mini games. There's Beyblades, which we talked about before. There's a card game in
that
here.
Card game kind of almost looked like Queen's Blood. It's Queen's Blood too. But yeah, I mean, the main thing is like you just see a lot of really, really great character designs coming out of here. We have like a trio of sharks, a magical girl squad.
Yeah, the magical girl squad is fun. Also the sharks.
Yeah. And then we see some returning characters from Rising that we've talked about before.
Which that's sort of true to the like older Suikoden's. You sometimes get those sort of like fun, kind of goofy looking characters that are maybe a little bit less grounded, but that's there. Suikoden 5 maybe a little less so, but so I think that's kind of very fair. There's one of the screenshots, and I think it showed a little bit in the trailer too. They have like some of the other characters, including one of the sharks. It seems like they're reenacting the events of Aiden Chronicle Rising. Let me link it. There's like, but yeah, it shows like CJ, Isha, and Garou, only it's not those three characters. It's three other characters pretending to be those characters.
Oh my gosh, that's awesome. I see the screenshot. Yes, yeah, what the screenshot says. It's a shark portrait. It says Isha.
That's not Isha. But those three characters are in the game. So.
Yeah, sure. That's fantastic, though. I didn't even catch that until you mentioned. I was like, oh wait, yeah, you're right. Yeah, this game is shaping up to be fantastic. I cannot wait. It is definitely a game that, like, when you see footage of it, you see like just the amount of passion and care they've got put into the project. So, you know, it's definitely one to look out for. We have some sales updates here. There is a Monster Hunter event that didn't have new info for Wilds, but it's like kind of a 20 year celebration, and then they had a. You know, survey results of like the people's most favorite monsters and everything. And they also gave us a sales update for Monster Hunter World, which has now passed 25 million sales worldwide. Holy shit.
It's worth noting that the last major update we got was like 23 million or something like that. And that was before the Return to World campaign thing that they started was, which absolutely caused an uptick in people like buying the game. So,
yeah, they had massive sales for it and everything as part of that campaign also. So, yeah.
Wilds is going to be insane. Wilds is going to be insane, especially if it's crossplay day one. Oh, man. Oh,
it's gonna
man.
Be great, dude. I'm kind of dreading already of like the day one experience because like, will the servers be able to handle it?
Yeah.
Will I be able to play with people the first day? I don't know. Hopefully they're prepared. But like, a lot of these things don't expect.
It really feels like Capcom is just like at the top of the world right now with like obviously RE4 remake last year.
It's all 7 million, I believe.
Yeah, hugely beloved. Like, it's done incredible so far. Obviously, like Dragon's Dogma 2 is coming out next week. Just going off of the Steam pre-orders and like wish lists and whatnot, that seems like at least financially, it's going to be a huge success.
And I guess they're the only gaming company in Japan that's doing so good to the point that everyone got like a huge salary boost and bonus pay.
Well, Nintendo's doing great too.
Yeah, they've done those too. They definitely report on those. But several other companies report on those as well. So
a lot of Japanese developers raise salaries. It seems like it was one of those things that like for a while salaries hadn't raised, and just I know I was actually starting to look into this a little bit more, but never got further into it. But basically. It was sort of like a cascading effect where one developer raised the salary and then another, and then they kind of all decided, you know what, if you want to be competitive, you know, hiring new grads or whatnot, we need to all raise salaries. So they, like, Marvelous, Square Enix, like, they all raise salaries.
Yeah, meanwhile, like, you look at the Western side of the industry, and it's like, oh no.
Yeah.
Getting laid off, rip.
Yeah, not good. So, but, you know, huge... Congratulations to Capcom for reaching such a fucking crazy milestone. Like, you know,
We always say it.
Like, when you think about, you thought about like the release of World, it's like, oh, that's cool. Like, when they're taking it serious. But who would have thought it would have done this?
I remember like there was like a stream very, very shortly after World came out, and it was like Capcom internal, and it was just, you could see just on the faces of the people on the stream just how relieved they were that immediately it was obvious that the gamble with World, which it was a gamble. It's easy to forget that now, but it was a huge gamble. But it paid off, and basically just obviously, like, Resident Evil 7 like also kind of contributed to it, like the rebound. But it's wild to think that, like, if you'd asked in like 2016, like, if no, if you'd asked like a decade ago, or said a decade ago, that Capcom would be arguably the most beloved third party like publisher slash developer in the industry, people would have looked at you funny. But nowadays, I feel like most people would be like, yeah, that makes sense.
Remember the days of like the early 2010s where Capcom was more known for like the typos on their boxes?
Capcom.
They were almost going bankrupt, wasn't it? They were like, what is it? They had like a Tekken versus Street Fighter, and everyone's like,
ugh. Yeah, I mean, definitely there's an like internal talk that, like, you know, Capcom was like kind of almost on the brink until Monster Hunter World really brought them back. That was the start of, like, hey, their rebound from not being in a great spot. Monster Hunter World kind of saved the company. It is very commonly attributed to be one of the major factors in saving that company and remaining and not being bought out. So, you know, good on them. It's interesting because when you think about several years ago, when you think about Monster Hunter as an IP, as a series, as a franchise, it's like one of those things, like, yeah, there are fans all over the world, but it's the most popular. It's most popular in Japan. It's really where most of the community thrives around that series. But, like, you know, there are players here and there. But then now, Monster Hunter World really expanded that audience in a really, really, really big way.
I remember when I went to Comic-Con 2013, I believe, something like that. Like, no. It would have been actually 2012 because it was the year before 3 Ultimate came out. Cause I remember they had like a demo and they had like a panel for it. And they made a big deal like during that Comic-Con where it's like, we want to make sure that we can make Monster Hunter as popular in the West as it is in Japan. And seeing them a decade later, them succeeding, it's like, man, so happy for them, because they even like, obviously back then they probably already knew that they were planning on making like a game for PS4 and Xbox One PC, and it's just like, man,
yeah, I'm you know, and everyone's just excited for Wilds, you know, like that, because like the series has garnered so much praise and attention and fervor that like most people who are existing fans now just like are just like, yeah, bring it on. We're so ready to see what the Monster Hunter World team has next. You know, what's in store?
It's not like World was just a fluke, because Rise has done really, really well too. So it's like, yeah, Wilds is going to be crazy.
Yeah,
we found a winning formula. That's all that matters.
So
let's go ahead and jump ahead to one of the news bits that's sort of related during this Monster Hunter like little stream event that they had. They did announce the release date for the remaster of Monster Hunter Stories, which is coming out to PlayStation 4, Nintendo Switch, and PC. We talked about this, I think it was last week. It's coming on June 14th for all those platforms. And this is sort of a surprise, you know, alongside that, on the same day for PlayStation 4, they're also releasing Monster Hunter Stories 2. I had forgotten that was like Switch and PC only.
Me too.
So that game is coming out basically on the same day. So if you are a PlayStation Monster Hunter fan, you get two Monster Hunter Stories games on the same day. So
they're both are pretty long games too.
Yep.
So you're getting fed. Obviously, these are different kinds of games to the typical Monster Hunter experience. It's more of a single player, like linear narrative, and has a different focus because you're making packs of the monsters to ride them into like turn-based battles. So, you know, but still, cool to see. So that Monster Hunter Stories is, you know, coming to more platforms, especially the first one, as James has mentioned, a lot of content that was previously Japanese exclusive. So Very, very cool to see that it'll be coming very soon. Another sales update here. Sea of Stars has surpassed 5 million players. It's not really a sales update, but a player update. And it's also getting a co-op single-player plus mode teased. And what what is this, like, single-player plus mode that's, like...
The teaser for it is literally, like, 10 seconds long. And it seems like out in the world, like, when you're exploring, you can have multiple people exploring at the same time. And then in battle, I think it's sort of like Final Fantasy IX's multiplayer, where you literally just take turns as different characters for different players. So
is
it's
it
like,
local only or online? Or
they don't say? Know.
Okay.
Yeah, and the reason why they call it 5 million players is it is on Game Pass, so they can't you can't count sales, really, or it's hard to with that combination. But yeah, definitely success for an indie studio. They already said that was way more than they expected. The game is getting DLC at some point. At least they said so. I don't know if this is what they meant, but yeah.
Okay, yeah, so they did mention in the press release that the teaser of a new mode coming to the game, 3-player couch co-op, so this seems to be a local only co-op mode, and then this single-player plus mode, that it's, as it's dubbed, it allows for 3 players to journey together. Each player will engage in traversal and combat with a new co-op timed hits mechanic as they embark with friends to Stars' grand adventure. So just keep in mind, this new co-op mode seems to be couch or local co-op only. Okay. Next thing here, this is kind of almost an update to an original article that you previously wrote, that East 2 is now joining East 1 Ancient East Vanished on this Egg console PC 88 emulator on PC. So the update here is that East 2 is now joining the first East in that, right?
Yeah, so basically, we talked about this a couple weeks ago. You can buy literally the original version of East, or an emulated version of it, on Nintendo Switch right now on the eShop. And by original version, I literally mean like the PC 88 version. It's literally Japanese text only in the game. Some of the emulator text and some of like the bonus material stuff you'll find in English, but the game itself is Japanese. But you can buy it on the North American shop. And now the second game you can also buy, which is East 2 Ancient East Vanished, the final chapter. It's kind of funny, he's calling it the final chapter now, but...
it is the final chapter of use.
The final chapter of 15-year-old Adol, and then he'll have several other chapters after that.
Yeah, but... play East 1 and 2 so you can be prepared for East 10,
the timeline, right?
Yeah, the next game in the timeline takes place right after East 2.
Oh, it's even later. Before Celceta. I think we've talked about
this. It literally, you have one of the professor dude from East 1 and 2 is with you
on the boat
in East, on the boat in East 10.
Nice.
It's literally just like immediately after East 2.
You gotta play East 1 and 2 to understand East 10.
It's very funny. It's like they literally get on the boat to go to Celceta, and the whole thing is like, "Hey, we got raided by fucking Vikings. Here you go. Here's an adventure that Adol never talked about.
Very, very noble things in Adol's life.
You know? Well, at least you didn't get in a shipwreck. That's all that matters.
Yeah. You're just Vikings, though. Adol can somehow commandeer ships in 10.
Yeah. Apparently, Adol never mentions this again.
It's really funny how like every East game like chronologically since 10 has been Adol got in a shipwreck when East 10 is all like, yeah, he's actually a really accomplished, like he can pilot a ship just fine. He's really good at this. It's like, sure, okay.
Look, Adol has a complicated life, okay? So, that dude has lived multiple lifetimes.
He's been trained by professionals, by the Vikings, of how to navigate dangerous terrain in a ship. You wouldn't know it, but he has.
Next up here, we have Terra Memoria is launching on March 27 for PS5, Xbox Series, Switch, and PC. This is from publisher Dear Villagers and developer La Tarde? I don't know. I'm sorry. I don't know.
I guess Le Moutard. I don't think it's French. I don't think it's, I think it's still a silent E, but I'm not sure.
Yeah. And this is described as a cozy turn-based RPG. We have a release
date. It's a French publisher and a French developer. Very French.
There's a lot of furry characters in it. I see.
It's got a kind of cool style with like the 2D sprites and like a kind of a simplified 3D world. But it's
that's kind of have like the isometric Golden Sun eye perspective in battles, it looks like.
Yeah.
Adam, you know what that is? That is mustard in French. Do not say mustard in French.
Maybe. The Mustard is the studio, I guess.
That's a good studio name.
It's stated to be like a mix between a turn-based RPG and kind of like a town builder. Like, unfortunately, I don't have any time to check this out, but I am like genuinely curious to see like if anyone else like just in my sphere checks it out. If, you know, if there's anything cool here at all.
Yeah, I mean, there's no real pedigree to
go off of. Yeah. So
yeah. So hopefully, you know, when we're not as busy later in the year and it turns out to be cool, I definitely might check it out. We'll see. We have a slice of life fishing RPG. Moonglow Bay is launching for PS5, PS4, and Switch on April 11th. This was previously released on Xbox consoles and PC in October 2021. So it's just kind of coming to more platforms. Good on them.
This is kind of like that voxel style pixel art-ish fishing RPG. I know there was some excitement for this when it's originally released. I don't really know.
I think I checked it on like Game Pass, but I still had Game Pass. Then I didn't get too far into it. It does have a really cool art style, that voxel style. This is an interesting one. The System Shock remake that came out in end of May last year is, you know, it really only released on PC storefronts, and now it's coming to PS5, PS4, Xbox Series, and Xbox One on May 21, but this will have new content with it. This will have a female protagonist option, and are there other additions to it? An expanded ending and a female protagonist option.
Yeah, it was kind of hidden in the announcement, where they just, it's like not even on the trailer at all. It's only in the text announcement where they say, now you can play as a female character, which I don't know if that really means anything in this sort of game, but
yeah. You can.
And then also, there's like an expanded ending, and it doesn't sound like it's like a secret ending. It literally just sounds like we expanded the ending. I even asked the PR, like, are these coming to the PC version? You know, they're not huge things, I'd imagine, but, you know, they're small little things. Like, I assume they're coming to the PC version, but you never said. And then they basically said, stay tuned. I'm like, okay. but yeah, it's basically a console port of these games. I know Brian played it. If he was here, he'd probably talk about it. As far as I know, relatively well received.
Yeah, I think people were satisfied with it.
Yeah. There's a remaster of the second game coming out. This is a full remake. The second game being not as old originally. They're just remastering that, but that's also coming out in the future.
Yeah, so definitely, you know, it took a long time for this remake to finally come out, but I'm glad they was able to.
Mm-hmm.
It was met with pretty high praise from the people who like System Shock. As we mentioned earlier, Paper Mario: The Thousand Year Door is coming to Switch on May 23. This remakester, I don't know what it is. Is it a remaster? Is it a remake? Who knows? But it's a re-release of that game. And have they detailed exactly what's new or different in this one yet?
No. So. Okay. One thing that's sort of interesting is that Nintendo never really calls it a remake or a remaster. They've always called it something like the most recent press release calls it revamped, like the revamped version.
Ooh.
And then other versions have just said like Paper Mario. Actually, give me one second here.
It's like when they're Super Mario RPG naming convention. They didn't add in like a remake or definitive edition or whatever at the end. Yeah. That was a Super Mario RPG.
Okay, here are some literal quotes from Nintendo pages or press releases. Various descriptions of this game. A visually enhanced version of Nintendo GameCube game Paper Mario The Thousand Year Door. Paper Mario The Thousand Year Door, the Nintendo GameCube game with upgraded graphics. This version for Nintendo Switch has revamped graphics and a suite of additional changes that make the game easier than ever to enjoy. Now, they haven't actually described any of the other additions, other than, like, honestly, due to the art style of the game, just having it play in higher resolution and maybe some touch-ups here and there is all you really need for visuals. Like, I wouldn't want them to change a whole lot more than that. I'm going to guess that they are adding, like, some sort of cutscene or text skip. That's my guess. Mm-hmm. Yeah, because the original game actually had a few moments where there's just a lot of text that you can't skip through.
What are the prices for these? I could have sworn people were upset because these were sort of like...
I wanted to say 50, but I don't know. Let me check.
Let me go check the eShop page. Yeah, I don't 60.
Oh, it is 60. Okay.
Wow, yeah. That's pretty steep.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, the original GameCube game would have been only 50 back then.
Yeah.
So...
I imagine they'll detail the changes, like, closer to the release date, because it's still pretty far out, being in late May, so they still have time. But that's the Nintendo tax sometimes. Like, obviously the Mario RPG was a full remake in terms of visuals, so kind of justified its price point, but this one, we'll see. That is a steep price for a, pretty old game, and with, I'm not gonna say minimal touch-ups, but just, it doesn't feel and that was our final news story for this week. It was a pretty light week, all things considered. I'm sure there'll be a lot more to talk about next week, but until then,
there was a Honkai Star Rail update earlier this morning. Chow, what did they announce? I haven't looked at this yet.
They basically announced a world map for their anniversary, and then they basically mentioned that March 7th might get like a path change, so that's something new, I guess. That's really cool, I would say.
So the only thing that I saw from a friend, and I have no context for this whatsoever, do you remember the game, Itadaki Street?
Which is like... Itadaki Street, yes, it's a Monopoly game.
Or it's like Mario Party-ish, right?
I guess. Yeah, like it's a like... Mario / Dragon Quest. I know that it was released as like Fortune Street on the Wii.
Anyways, a friend of mine just kind of randomly, I have no context for this, said, "Oh wow, they're adding Itadaki Street to a Honkai." Like, okay,
yeah, it's one of the new modes. Probably a lot more simplified probably than Itadaki Street.
I kind of wish I could get over myself when it came to like gacha games, because the little I played of Honkai Star Rail, I actually really enjoyed, but it's just one of those things where the ick just permeates and I can't ignore it.
Yeah, makes sense.
It makes sense. I mean, I hate this kind of business model, but I enjoy the game, so I'll just stick with it and bear with it. That's for me. But if you have the willpower, then yeah, stay away from it. Then I highly recommend to stay away from it.
I'm the most unreliable person because of these games, because I immediately ditch them as soon as like a real game comes out. I just forget. I'm like they're kind of like time wasters. I'm like, I'll just play this until like the next game, and then once a new game releases, I'm just like, okay, I'll go play that game. Goodbye game, and I never come back to it. It's like the Atelier game, like earlier this year, where I gave it a shot, and I actually did enjoy it, like because I like the battle system. But once new games started coming out, I was like, all right. Peace out.
That was especially funny because they tried to imply that it was a mainline Atelier game, even though it very clearly never was.
I mean, that's their
definition.
That's how they describe it.
That's their marketing play, okay?
They flat out said it was a mainline.
They're the ones who get to decide that.
Yep.
I guess. So.
Wow, when are we going to get a real Atelier game again?
It's like Atlus saying that, all the Persona spinoffs are canon, okay? They said it. Persona Q, actually.
You're the dancing one.
Yep. those are all arms, really funny.
Stop that gas station attendant in a dance contest.
I don't know, besides, obviously, the two big RPGs next week, are we anticipating, any new events coming out next week? I don't think so.
We have
PAX East happening, a future game show, I mean, there might be stuff like we'll get a release date to Notria with that future game show.
Yeah, we already mentioned that next week we have the release of Dragon's Dogma 2, we have the release of Rise of the Ronin, we have the release of the Princess Peach Showtime. Legend of Legacy. What else? There's still a lot coming out next week. Oh, yeah. Reverse Collapse, Codename Bakery.
Oh, right. Yeah, that's also coming out as well. Unfortunately, yep. I don't think we have anyone.
And Horizon Forbidden West on PC.
Right. Oh, God, that's right.
And Final Fantasy 14 on Xbox. Although you can kind of already play that. So, on Xbox.
Mm-hmm. And yeah, I think that'll... I'm like looking just to make sure. Anything else? Grandia HD Collection coming out to PS4 and Xbox One.
Yep.
Still has the filtered, sprites. So it's like, I can't believe they didn't add an option to the save. But not even just like the sprites themselves, but even the environments. You look at the filters on them and it's like, it just looks, it looks so bad. It looks so fucking bad, man.
No. It is what it is. All right, then. Thank you for listening to us here on the TetraCast. It was we called a relatively short episode, even though I know it's been like almost 2 hours.
Hey, 1 hour and 40 minutes is short for us.
That's pretty good. Like, we're learning.
That's like almost half the time. Well, a little more than half the time it usually takes us. So
that's amazing.
I think it was like the Game Informer podcast at one point. They were like, we apologize, we have such a long episode this week, and it was like 90 minutes. Like, oops.
Yeah, I think you and Brian have given that anecdote like 4 or 5 times.
Oh yeah.
So you can find us on our site, rpgsite.net. You can find us on Twitter/X over at @rpgsite. You can find us on Facebook, facebook.com/rpgsitenet, or YouTube, where Adam and Ryan uploads all these episodes of the TetraCast over at youtube.com/rpgsitenet. You can find us on your favorite podcast app, iTunes, Spotify, etc. You can join us over at Discord at discord.gg/rpgsite, where it's always active. People are always... discussing and enjoying games and other stuff there. And yeah, you can find us next time, next week, and we'll be talking about, you know, Dragon's Dogma 2 and Rise of the Ronin. Well, are destined to be the two ones that we're going to talk about next week, but we'll see what else comes out. We'll see if there's any other news worth talking about. Thank you for listening to us. Thank you, James. Thank you, Adam. And thank you, Chow, for joining me. I've been your host, Josh Torres, and until next time.
Later, folks.